Yeah, and that's maybe where we get this idea of sort of this soul distinction from the body, is that the Bible isn't totally clear on what happens between the time
right.
that someone dies and then Jesus comes back and resurrects their body.
Right. Right.
Is that just kind of a soul-like existence?
Right.
And many scholars think that's the case. And if that's the case, then there is this sort of temporary period
right.
where it is more like we imagine.
Right.
So we do know, and I think what you're referring to is I mentioned that the passage that Paul says to be absent from the body is to be present with the Lord.
Right. Right.
And it's interesting, he uses the word absent from the body. So
yes.
there's this time that we're maybe disconnected from our bodies
yeah.
in this in between time,
right?
But we're with the Lord,
right?
And though our loved ones who have passed away and have trusted in the Lord are there with Jesus mm-hmm. now, experiencing His presence. But ultimately, the plan is for this real physical new world, new heaven, new earth, and new bodies. This is Unhurried, and I'm your host, Doug Kyle. You know, life can feel like a race, rushing to the next thing, never time to reflect. But there is incredible value in slowing down with God to take in His perspective, His presence, His pace. When and what should we expect about the return of Jesus? Is there a clear timeline? And what happens to believers who are still around when it happens? Let's get caught up. I'm being caught up in the air. Let's get caught up on that. This is Season 2, Episode 40 of Unhurried. I'm your host, Doug Kyle. I'm alongside of Ryan Viramontes. Episode 40.
I know.
Of Season 2.
I know.
It feels like we just started Season 2, and we were starting to go, hey, we have 3 or 4 under our belt,
yeah.
and here we are with 40 of them.
I know.
It's crazy.
I know. I remember when we even first started in Season 1, where we had, 3 or 4 episodes already
yeah.
recorded, and no one had even known about it. You
right,
know?
Because your input was good that we should have a few of them recorded
sure.
before we made
yeah.
it went public.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
And here we are,
you know, season
yeah.
two, you know,
amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah. So feels like we just got into Season 2 and it's getting near the end of it. Season 2, of course, was one where we introduced the YouTube videos.
Yeah.
So we have that component as well. And, it's been great. And I can't wait for today's topic. I think it's going to really be engaging for our listeners. Thanks to you who are following along either on video or audio. We're grateful to have you along. Hey, Ryan, you know, as
yep.
I'm thinking about yesterday, though, for you had a couple extra guitars to choose from when you went up to lead worship yesterday.
Yes, I did. Yes.
Yeah, but you only used your one.
I only used mine.
Yes.
Because
there were other options.
There were lots of different
yeah.
options. Usually there's a guitar or two, you know, around just mm-hmm. in case, you know, something goes wrong
or maybe you want just different sound.
Or sometimes I want a different sound
yeah.
and stuff like that or, you know, something. So, you know, there's usually a guitar or two hanging around on the stage. And then yesterday I'm getting ready and I'm tuning my guitar for second service. And I realized that my children's guitars are on the stage. And one of them is bright yellow and the other one is bright pink. And
pink
I'm like,
and yellow. Yes.
Wait, I've seen these guitars before. You
uh-huh.
know, I'm like, wait a minute. I know where these guitars are. And then I see your face, your snickering, smiling little face. And I'm like, oh, okay. All right.
I see what happened.
I see what's going on around
yeah.
here. Practical jokes on a Sunday.
These are tiny guitars.
They're tiny.
Just so you know, they're not full-size guitars.
No.
They're child-size
yes,
guitars.
Yes,
that
yeah.
were. They're not toys, though. They're actually, look. You know, they look like they're pretty sophisticated for a kid's guitar.
Yeah, they're the coolest. They're the coolest guitars. They're called Luge guitars
mm-hmm.
and they are meant to have children, you know, learn the guitar and be able to teach them how to play. And it's not so daunting because it only has three, it's the three bottom strings. So it's the G, B, and E string of mm-hmm. the guitar. Mm-hmm. And you can do a lot of chords with those three strings. And it's not as daunting. The neck is really, really tiny, so their little hands can fit around it.
But they look like electric guitars.
Yes, they do.
They're not like you. Oh, I imagine people are picturing like a little an acoustic guitar.
Yeah, it's not like a ukulele. No, it looks like an electric guitar, but it's small and it's acoustic. And the kids are, you know, they're in guitar lessons. My children make me laugh so much, you know, because they'll come home from their guitar lessons. Okay, and listen, I'm not saying I'm the world's best guitar player. I've just been playing for a long time, okay? But it's like...
longer than they have.
Yes. And they come home and they go, do you know how to do this? And I go, yeah.
Yeah, actually, yeah, I do.
I do. I do know how to do that, you know?
That's so funny. I don't think we've ever talked about your kids having guitar lessons on the podcast. I didn't realize.
Have we not talked about that?
I know they dance. I know they play hockey, but they also have guitar lessons.
Yeah, guitar lessons.
Maybe you mentioned it, but that,
I think I have. Maybe.
That seems amazing that they're doing that. Well, the backstory, I think our listeners and viewers need to understand is that a few weeks ago, you were very proud of the fact that you had found this guitar rack that you could put on the stage that would hold a bunch of guitars.
Right.
So that, and you just thought that was so cool that there's this.
Well, because we used to have one.
Yeah.
And, you know, as we know, and being in a church and people who have, you know, either served in a church or have done ministry or some volunteered in church, things grow legs.
Yeah.
and we used to have one. And I don't know what happened to it.
Okay.
I can't find it. So I was like, okay, I'm going to get another one. And so I went ahead and did, and I was kind of geeking out about it.
Yeah.
You know?
And so even though you only use one guitar on Sunday, you still have a display of options behind you. So I just wanted to, you know, add to it.
Right.
Add to the mix.
Add to the collection.
So your kids, and how would I get a hold of your kids' guitars? Well, your wife was complicit in this, this prank to get those up there.
Yes.
She joined in the fun.
I love that you guys have this time on Sunday. You know what I mean? I'm always like, don't bug Doug. Like, don't let him know that we couldn't get the screens on for half an hour before he got here. Like,
He doesn't need to know.
He doesn't need to know that half of our snake went down or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, we lost internet for an hour. Like, he doesn't need to know that stuff. Mm-hmm. It's all good. You know, when he shows up, we're like business as usual. You know? And then like, but then I'm like, now you're placing guitars and, you know, getting my wife in on it, you know. Cindy and I are going to come up with something.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear. Well, now I'm nervous. Now I'm nervous. I'm
not that clever, though. You have a good prank, you know, streak going. You're good at those little pranks, you know.
Well, here we go. Well, let's get into today's topic. We are in the middle of this kind of focus in our podcast on Hope on the Horizon, and we're looking at from a long-term perspective on how Jesus' second coming impacts us today. We've been what I've called hope scrolling along the way, and I noticed in our YouTube videos that you've hashtagged hope scrolling.
Yes.
You have a bunch of hashtags there, but one of the things you hashtagged was hope scrolling, and I'm thinking, well, that's got to be very unique. Who else would put hope scrolling? So I clicked on it, and there were like a couple dozen YouTube videos out there with that are tagged with hope scrolling. Mm-hmm. I thought I invented the term. Apparently, I did not. There's like
I thought you did too.
I did. I think I thought I did, but apparently I'm not the first.
No,
like at least two dozen different videos out there with hashtagged hope scrolling.
Right.
So well, there you go. Anyway, that's what we've been doing, and that the reason is because each chapter of 1 Thessalonians ends with this reference to the second coming of Jesus, as if you know you're reading through the letter. We just scroll down and another reminder that in the future, Jesus will return, and to let that focus change the way we live today. This week, this week in this message, we got to the go-to passage for a pre-tribulational view of the rapture, of being caught up in the air. And I want to talk a little bit more about that because there's a couple different ways to look at it. And I kind of mentioned in the message yesterday that I was going to go a little more deeply into it in today's today's podcast, so that's what we want to do. But the end of 1 Thessalonians chapter 4 is the place where the word rapture isn't in the Bible anywhere. I actually didn't use the term yesterday in the sermon, but this is the passage that that term is linked to, and I'll just read a couple verses here. 1 Thessalonians 4:16 and 17 says, "For the Lord himself will come down from heaven with a loud command, with the voice of the archangel, and with the trumpet call of God, and the dead in Christ will rise first. After that, we who are still alive and are left will be caught up together with them in the clouds to meet the Lord in the air, and so we will be with the Lord forever." So this is the passage that if you look at the rapture as happening at the beginning of the 7-year tribulation, this is going to be your go-to passage. And so for those who are just kind of getting caught up with that, though, this terminology, let me just briefly say there's a couple different ways that maybe more than a couple, but a couple primary ways that these verses have been understood. The pre-tribulational view is that there's going to be a 7-year tribulation at the end, the last days before Jesus returns, and that this being caught up in the air, this rapture happens at the beginning of that. There's a mid-tribulational view as well that says it happens in the middle. And then there's the post-tribulational view, which has been actually the historic view for most of Christendom, most of the time that believers have thought about this and written about this, and that is at the end of the 7-year period that this rapture happens. So it happens in concert with Jesus's return. And, you know, people I deeply respect land differently on this topic, and they're, you know, there's really, you can make a strong case for many of them. I'm very comfortable with a warm conversation about this. This is not a heated or a, you know, hill to die on kind of topic for me. And yet I think it's very interesting, and it's probably important for people to at least understand what the ways that it has been looked at over time.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember when I was a kid, the Left Behind series was very popular and stuff. And so I, you know, read a few of those books and, you know, I don't remember how biblically sound they were, or, you know, I was just kind of reading it just for the story, and they were popular in the Christian community. And,
yeah. Really popular.
Know,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, but yeah, it's something to think about and, you know, like you said, warmly debate. You know, I respect a lot of people, you and others, that land so differently on this issue.
Sure.
You know, so, but sure. I wouldn't say that any of them are ungodly by any means, you know.
Right. I think godly and thoughtful people have landed differently on this, and that needs to be said at the front. Today, I'm hoping that this discussion gives more light and not more heat to the topic.
Yeah.
So that's the tone. Sure. That's the tone in which I want to share about it. And I really want to cover four things in our time together. First of all, the physicality of our resurrection. I think that's an interesting part of this passage. Secondly, I want to talk about, well, it's been 2,000 years since Paul, you know, wrote that Jesus was going to be coming soon. What do the Bible writers mean by that if it still hasn't happened?
Right.
I want to talk a little bit about the timing of being caught up in the air. That's why we're going to get caught up on being caught up. What does that mean? And that will really deal specifically with it, where it happens in relationship to the 7-year tribulation. And then I want to finally say, how important is this? How important is this to our conversation and our walk with the Lord? So first of all, the physical and bodily resurrection. The reason I want to bring this up is because this is one of the questions I had after the message, was not so much a question, but just a great conversation with someone who was saying, man, that's kind of mind-blowing to really think about the fact that it's going to be a physical resurrection of our bodies. And I think that oftentimes the way we think about the afterlife is as if we're sort of going to be these kind of, I don't know, ghost-like, sort of like immaterial, you know, spirits and souls, but not having a real physical body. And yet that's not what the scriptures teach.
Right.
And even in this passage, you know, the context of this passage was that the Thessalonian believers were concerned about what was going to happen to those who had died.
Yeah.
They had their members of their church who were committed believers, and yet they had passed away. The Lord had not returned yet, and so they wanted to know what was going to happen with them. And that's what Paul is addressing in verse 13 of chapter 4. He says, "Brothers and sisters, we don't want you to be uninformed about those who sleep in death, so that you do not grieve like the rest of mankind who have no hope." That is really the concern, and the reason that Paul wrote these words at all is to kind of address their misunderstanding and maybe their concern about the fact that what's going to happen to our loved ones that have passed away.
Right.
Yeah. And so this person came up to me afterwards because the passage says that they're going to be raised from the dead. This physical bodily resurrection that's going to happen. And is that really true? And the answer is yes. That's what the scripture teaches, that we're not going to be these ghost-like creatures with unembodied souls. Sort of like, you know, the picture that we have is like we're going to be lighter than the clouds. Mm. We're going to be playing harps on top of clouds, and we'll be so light that we don't even slip through the cloud.
Right, you know,
the clouds are able to hold us up.
Yes, yeah.
And that's not the picture that the Bible gives us. The Bible gives us that we're going to have spiritual bodies, but they're also going to be physical. They're spiritual and physical. The bodies that we have for right now are designed for earth. The ones we'll have in heaven are designed for eternity. They're going to be spiritual in nature, but that they're no less physical.
Right.
We're still going to be real, real bodies in heaven. And Christianity is unique in this high view of the physical body among other religions. I think it's really interesting. The incarnation, Jesus is coming to this world and taking on a human body, is a very elevated view of our bodies. A lot of religions tend to dismiss the body or say, you know, the physical isn't important, it's only the spiritual. And yet Christianity has always held that the spiritual and the physical are both part of what God cares about, part of what it means to live for God is to honor him spiritually and with our bodies as well. The resurrection is also, Jesus' resurrection is also a huge endorsement on the human body. He rose and he had a physical body. He wasn't just a spirit. He wasn't just, you know, kind of, you know, ghost-like. And you could actually touch his body. You could feel his body. He ate food while he was among them, which is kind of crazy to think about what that means. He did appear and disappear. So there is this sort of sense in which there's this spiritual nature to it. He could kind of show up where he wanted. And so that hints at this fact that our bodies are immortal, but they're still physical.
Right.
As well. So isn't that interesting?
I mean, that's
I don't know. That's hard for us to get our minds about what that means.
Yeah. Well, I know, like, you know, Thomas, you know, doubting Thomas, you know, he gets such a bad rep, you know, but like, I think he was also, I think, being very human in his interaction with Jesus after Jesus rose, you know, where he was like, I need to see the physical side of things.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because it's like, that's all we know.
Yeah.
This side of heaven is the physical side of things.
Yeah.
You know, the tangible, you know,
unless I can touch the scars, I'm not going to believe.
Right.
And guess what? He could.
He could.
And he fell down and said, my God.
Right.
And
I know, we call him doubting Tom, when really it's like, he was just being real.
Yeah.
You know, like he just wanted to see the person that he knew here on earth, you know, in a physical sense, you know.
A lot of times the way we think about it is sort of like you die and then your soul sort of, I don't know, leaves the body.
Right.
And then it's just that soul that's going to be eternal and your body just is left to decay.
Mm-hmm.
But if that's what the resurrection was, the tomb of Jesus would still have a body in it.
Right.
They would have seen that, you know, if Jesus only rose spiritually, and not physically, then there would still be a body in the grave.
Right.
The Easter message is that the tomb is empty.
And
Jesus is alive, but also the body has been resurrected.
Right.
And so that's our hope too. And the Bible speaks about our experience here on your earth as being a shadow of the good things that are coming. Hebrews 10:1. It's going to be our life and our experience and our bodies and our existence will be way more real in heaven than it is here.
Yeah.
And rather than being sort of like a dreamlike state, and this is the reality.
Right.
It's the flip of that. This will be the shadow.
Right.
And heaven will be the reality.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure. For sure. And I also like to, I think yesterday you said in your message that, you know, Paul is writing to the Thessalonians and encouraging them to, you know, not, you said it better than I'm going to say right now, but like not to, to not lose hope of the people that have died before, that they're still with Jesus, but,
yes,
but their bodies are now going to be in this physical and also, you know, spiritual sense, you know, when Jesus comes back and, you know, raises everyone from the dead and stuff like that. You know, like, I can't remember how you said it yesterday, but I like the way you said it. It was very comforting in the way that you said that, you know, that, especially for somebody who, you know, and like most people in our church have lost somebody close to us,
yes,
you know, it was comforting that you said that yesterday.
Yeah.
You know?
And that's maybe where we get this idea of sort of this soul distinction from the body, is that the Bible isn't totally clear on what happens between the time that someone dies and then Jesus comes back and resurrects their body.
Right.
Is that just kind of a soul-like existence?
Right.
And many scholars think that's the case. And if that's the case, then there is this sort of temporary period where it is more like we imagine.
Right.
So we do know, and I think what you're referring to is I mentioned that the passage that Paul says to be absent from the body is to be present with the Lord.
Right. Right.
And it's interesting, he uses the word absent from the body. So there's this time that we're maybe disconnected from our bodies, in this sort of this in between time,
right?
But we're with the Lord,
right?
And though our loved ones who have passed away and have trusted in the Lord are there with Jesus now, experiencing His presence, but ultimately the plan is for this real physical new world, new heaven, new earth, and new bodies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So that's one of the questions that came out of yesterday, and I wanted to follow up on that. I also wanted to, you know, talk a little bit about what does the Bible mean when it says Jesus is going to return soon, and now it's been, you know, a couple millennia.
Right.
What does that mean? Matter of fact, when you look at what Paul said in verse 17, 1 Thessalonians 4, he said, "We who are still alive and are left will be caught up with him." Paul pictured himself being still alive when Jesus returned.
Right.
And he pictured some of them, the Thessalonians, to also be still alive. Mm-hmm. And yet we know that still hasn't happened yet. So is that okay that Paul saw that? Is this a challenge to the Bible? Is this something that we should be worried about as believers, that it didn't happen in their lifetime? Or was this by design? Is this the way that God has set it up so that every generation of believers would see themselves in the same way? And my conviction is it's the latter, that God is, his soon return is an indicator that we are always, as his people, supposed to be ready for him to come.
Right.
And that if he said, he's coming back, but it's not going to be for another 2,000 years, then for all those centuries in between, people wouldn't have that sense of urgency or the need to be ready to meet him. And of course, we all need to live that way, because we don't know what tomorrow brings for us. And we all need to live in which, you know, we could meet the Lord face to face before I finish this sentence.
Right. Right.
You know, because that's the reality. God has set it up that way. And so to me, I think it's by design. What the Bible means by soon is really captured in the word imminent.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, it could happen at any time.
Right.
And it's sooner now than it was before. There's a definite time that is coming, and we're closer now. And that's my own conviction, is that God is to set it up so that all of us would live with that hope, as well as with that urgency that we could see him again.
Right. Mandy always, like, the way that she looks at, like, life and you know, stuff like at the house or with the kids is she's always like, you're either like proactive or you're reactive. So you're either just like reacting to whatever's happening, or you can try and plan and be prepared and have a plan, you know, and know how to handle certain situations. And so it's like, I think I've always kind of looked at it that way. It's like, it's the Bible's not clear on when Jesus is returning, right? Mm-hmm. We know he's going to, but we as Jesus's followers should be prepared, right? Like we should be prepared. We should be leading people into a relationship with him. Our lives should be reflecting the love that he has given us. And so we should be proactive in our walk with him.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. That's a great way to put it. We're proactive. We're ready. We're prepared.
Right.
And we live that way. And that's by design. Jesus said that no one knows the day or the hour. And so we can't, we shouldn't predict it, or we shouldn't like, you know, say for sure it's going to happen by this date. But we always live in a state of readiness.
Yes.
And that's God's design for his people for all time.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I think that's what was going on. So it's so interesting to me that Paul said this and the Thessalonians, you know, received this letter, but none of them experienced it in the second category of those who were still alive and remain when it happens. But Paul and the Thessalonian believers experienced it in the first sense, the way that he was talking about those who had died and meet the Lord face to face that way.
Right.
Yeah. So, well, let's get into the timing. I know this is why some people wanted to hear this, this podcast. And so, I want to talk about the timing of the things that are mentioned in this passage. I'm going to go back to verse 15, which to me is very helpful. Verse 15 of chapter 4 begins this way, according to the Lord's word. So I want to just tuck that away. What Paul is talking about here is consistent with Jesus's teaching on this as well. He says, according to the Lord's word, and by Lord, he means Jesus, because later in that same verse, he talks about the coming of the Lord, which is the coming of Jesus. So according to Jesus's word, these things are going to happen. He goes on to mention a loud command, the voice of an archangel, the trumpet call of God. And then he says in verse 17, after that, after this loud command, after this voice of the archangel, after the trumpet call of God, after that, he says in verse 17, we who are still alive and are left will be caught up together. So the timeline for Paul in this passage is based on something that Jesus said, and it happens after this angel, archangel's voice and this trumpet call of God. After that is when we're caught up to meet the Lord and be in the air. So the question that we need to ask is, where did Jesus talk about this? Is there a place that Jesus talked about those things as well? I mean, we're not surprised that Paul is talking about the second coming. He does so throughout this letter at the end of each chapter, but this time he synchronizes it with a trumpet blast, with an angel's call, and then the gathering of the elect, those who belong to him after that. And if you're coming to it from a pre-tribulational standpoint, that you think this happens at the beginning of the rapture or even the middle of the rapture, then you're saying that this is not truly the second coming. This is sort of a precursor to the second coming, and all of these things happen at the very beginning. I'm well acquainted with that position. I lived there for a while. And it's an appealing position because it means that we get to escape all the end time troubles. I think that's the appeal of the position.
Right.
But it seems to me an unforced reading of this, it links our departure with his arrival. This is talking about the coming of Jesus, not 7 years before the coming of Jesus.
Right.
And this is just as much about us going as his arrival.
Right.
He's arriving. We're going up. He's coming down. And verse 15 talks about us being left until the coming of the Lord. I like that you reference the books Left Behind.
Yeah.
Because the concept in that thinking is that you don't want to be left behind. Left behind is a bad thing.
Right.
But here Paul says we are those who are left until the coming of the Lord.
Right.
And being left is left until his coming means to be remain, those mm-hmm. who are still alive when he returns.
Right, right.
So where does Jesus talk about this? If this is according to the Lord's word, let's ask ourselves, where does Jesus, you know, speak about, you know, a trumpet blast, the voice of an angel, the gathering of God's people dead and alive? Is there a place where he does that? And there is. In Matthew chapter 24, Jesus devotes a whole chapter to what will happen at the end times. And just a quick overview, he explains that at the end of history, as we know it, the things that will happen after false prophets come, after false messiahs, after the temple is destroyed, the desolation of the temple, after the sun is darkened, and after the skies are shaken. In other words, after everything that's supposed to happen, what the Bible calls a tribulation, it is then that Jesus says next on the timeline will be this. After all those things happen, he says, then the Son of Man, you'll see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of heaven with power and great glory. And he will send an angel with a loud trumpet call, and they will gather his elect from the four winds and from one end of the heavens to the other. That is, from one horizon to the other. This is Matthew 24, 30 and 31. And so if you look at the timeline that Jesus gives in Matthew 24, all the events of the tribulation happen first, and then there's this angel, you know, shout, trumpet blast, mm-hmm. and then there is the gathering of the elect from both, you know, all sides of the earth. So I think that's what Paul had in mind when he says, according to the Lord's own word. He's saying, yeah. This is what Jesus taught.
Right.
That was the order. So to me, again, if an unforced reading of this puts this event of the being caught up in the air, the gathering, at the end of the tribulation. Mm-hmm. And I feel like this is also consistent with what Jesus meant when he prayed in John 17:15. My prayer is not that you take them out of the world, but that you protect them from the evil one. Mm-hmm. And if you believe as I do that the being caught up in the air, the rapture of the church happens at the same time as the second coming, kind of at the end of this world as we know it, then what we believe is that Jesus is going to protect us mm-hmm. along the way, that just as he's always protected his people in trouble, mm-hmm. rather than taking them out of trouble, that the end times will be no different.
Right.
Jesus said it'll be like the days of Noah. Mm-hmm. And think about Noah. God didn't take Noah and his family out of the storm. He protected them in the storm.
Right. Right.
God didn't take Daniel and his buddies out of the fire. He protected them in the fire.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that seems to be God's plan all along, mm-hmm. is that he doesn't, you know, kind of give us a quick exit when trouble comes our way. He sustains us through the valley of the shadow of death.
Right.
You're with me.
Right, right, right. Like a true, you know, father, as you know, have way more experience than I do, but you know, as a father, you try and teach your children that, you know, it's okay to like struggle sometimes. It's okay to like not always look for an easy way out, you
yeah.
know, and kind of allow them to figure some things out. And, you know, things can be messy sometimes, you know, and you have to kind of allow them to, you know, figure it out, you know.
Yes.
Obviously, if it gets, you know, to a terrible place, you can step in, you know, but like,
sure.
you know, even with, you know, my kids and stuff, it's like, you know, it's okay to struggle a little bit, you know, it's like, but I'm there with you, you know what I mean? And not that God allows us to struggle, but in the sense of like, you know, he's with us in the struggle. He's with us in the storm. He's with us in all of those places.
Absolutely.
You know
what I mean? Yeah. So, yeah. 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 I think our hope as believers isn't that God's going to shuttle us out of end time troubles, but rather he's going to protect us
right.
in them. The book of Revelation talks about how he seals his followers
yes.
In the end times. And that seal is his protection. He doesn't mm-hmm. shuttle us out. He seals us
right.
and he protects us
right.
in.
Right.
And so that's my conviction. And I just want to throw that out there, not because it's the most important thing in the world, but because It's helpful to know that there's more than one way to look at it. Yeah. I think when I, my early days of Christianity, I thought that there was only one way to sure. understand this passage. And now that, that I've studied and looked at it more deeply, I realize that, that many believers all over the world, many of them going through much more severe persecution mm-hmm. than we are here, understand this passage differently.
Yes.
They understand that this is in sync with his coming mm-hmm. and not kind of an early quick exit mm-hmm. out of it. How important is this? Well, you know, it's interesting. It wasn't that important. It was not that important for the Thessalonians because, I mean that at least in this sense, it didn't apply to them.
Yeah.
They didn't need to know that second part of what we are still alive and remain, mm-hmm. what that meant for them. All of them died before this being caught up in the heavens, this rapture happened. And so Paul taught them about this, I think primarily for them to understand the hope that they had for their loved ones and the hope they had for themselves. Kind of the end of verse 17, we'll be with the Lord forever. That's the main point.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, he's going to rescue us. He's going to call us to himself and we'll be with him differently. And so I don't think this is, the most important thing that we have our minds around. People, as I said, that I deeply respect have landed differently on this. It is not crucial, but I think it's great to have a warm conversation about it that gives mm-hmm. more light than heat.
Yes. Yes. While you were talking yesterday, I kept on thinking of that Crystal Lewis song from back in the day.
Which
people
one?
Get ready. Jesus is coming.
Oh, there
coming.
You go. Okay.
You know, so I was kind of thinking about that. I was like, oh, that would have been a fun song to sing,
yeah.
but you know, a little throwback, but
yeah,
you know, but, yeah. but in that way too, it's like, I was thinking about the lyrics of that song and I was like, oh, well, that's an encouraging song too. And mm-hmm. like how Paul ends, the chapter 4 in Thessalonians, it's like he says, and encourage each other with these words. You
yes.
know what I mean? And it's like, it is an encouraging fact to that we as Christians can say that we know Jesus is coming back and we should, you know, be proactive in our walk with him, you know?
So. Yeah. I'm glad you brought up those final words because that's really Paul's heart for whatever way we're supposed to understand this part of First Thessalonians, it is meant to encourage us.
Yeah.
We should get yeah. courage from it. It shouldn't yeah. scare us. It shouldn't panic us.
No.
It shouldn't make us argumentative or like we want to. He doesn't say, therefore, convince each other with right. these words or argue yeah. with each other yeah. about these words
yeah.
or, you know, prove you're right to each other with these words. He says, encourage one another
right.
with these words.
Right.
And to be completely candid, that changed the way I preached this message
mm-hmm.
because as I was preparing the message, I was going to go a little harder on the post-tribulational position.
Yeah.
I was going to be a little bit more, I think people need to know where I'm coming from. And so I shared, you know, my conviction in my heart, but I think I was a little bit broader on compassion for mm-hmm. different ways that people would come at this mm-hmm. because of what Paul says at the end, encourage each other with these words.
Yeah.
The big picture here is not to feel like you've got this rock solid timeline
yeah.
all figured out.
Yeah.
The purpose of it is for us to find courage and encouragement and strength, knowing that we're going to be with the Lord forever.
Yeah.
And in the context of the believers that they had lost and the grief that they were experiencing and the hope that we have for heaven seemed way more important
yeah.
than us getting nitpicky about, you know, which plan we follow.
Right, right. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I also like to yesterday, you know, I kind of alluded to it earlier that said, you know, like the people that have passed before us are just, you know, first in line.
Yeah,
know?
They're first in line.
I liked that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I know you and I jokingly will say to each other that, you know, that you're closer to the, you know, to the throne than I am. Or, you know,
wait,
we joke.
You know, I don't say that. You say that. I say that about you. I'm sure I'm going to get there and I'm going to have binoculars and go, wow, Ryan, nice seats. Well done. Look at you up there.
Well, this might be too inside baseball, but I often do have this thought where, you know, as worship leaders, right? Like we're leading people, you know, in worship to, you know, praise our amazing and awesome and powerful God. And I just, when we do get to heaven, you know, I'm just going to be like, I don't know what my job is going to be.
Yeah.
Right. Cause right now this is my vocation. This is my calling. It's my job. But when I get to heaven, I would be like, he's right there.
Yeah.
You know, like, well, I'm just going to be an usher. I think I'm going to be like, I'm going to be the guy that's like, oh, G35. Oh, these are good seats. Okay. Yeah. Right this way.
Right this way. Okay. Follow me.
So that's going to be my job.
There's a different way to think about that though.
Okay.
Okay. Because, you know, my job is primarily to help people understand, you know, to teach and to preach the truth of Scripture.
Sure.
But it says when we get to heaven, you know, we'll know completely, perfectly, because there's nothing else to learn.
Right.
You know, everybody will know everything.
Right.
My job will be done.
Yeah.
On the other hand, when you get to heaven, we're going to be praising God. So we're going to need a lot of praise leader, you know, a lot of worship leaders.
Right, right.
So maybe, you know, your job security is good for you.
Except I'm doing the 3 a.m. to 3:30 a.m. service. You know what I mean? Phil and Chris Tomlin, they're doing the 9 o'clock.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
I'm exactly. Doing the 3:30.
You're 3:30 in the morning? Yeah, 3:30 a.m. Yeah. I love it. Oh, man. This one church I went to way back when I was a kid, like a teenager, they had a round-the-clock prayer ministry.
Yes, yes.
And they would pray, and you'd have to take this. That's a tough slot.
That's a tough slot.
You know, sure, I'll pray at 9 a.m. or 9 p.m.
Yeah.
But who's going to take the 3:30 a.m. prayer slot?
I know, I know.
There are people that did.
I know. When I was doing youth ministry too, they would do like, it was really popular to always do like the all-nighters or the lock-ins and stuff like that. And I just like, I would try and find every excuse to not be there at the church that day.
Yes.
Just be like, I can't do it. I can't.
Yeah.
I just can't.
Yeah.
You know?
I'd
be like, oh, I have a paper due. And they're like, oh, you do? I'm like, it's due like in a month.
But it's
should probably get
due.
Started.
It's due. I, you know what? Proactive, not reactive.
You're like, okay, never mind. I'll see you on Friday.
I love it. Love it. Well, hey, so I got a listener question here for us to grapple with. We didn't have one last week, I think, and someone wrote and said they missed it.
Oh, okay.
So let's keep them going.
Okay, here we go.
And that's contingent upon you, our listeners and viewers, sending those questions.
Yeah,
so you guys keep it going. Please send in any questions that you have to, you can leave a comment on YouTube or you can email us at unhurriedpodcast@gmail.com. So anyway, one listener, this was, it kind of led to a question. They sent me a photo of them camping and they sent it to our email, and you can see in the background their tent trailer all set up. They're out in the wilderness somewhere. It's evening. They're sitting around the campfire, and he's holding up an Unhurried mug.
Nice.
Like this mug right here.
Nice.
And right by the campfire. And said something like, you know, Unhurried by the campfire.
Yeah.
And he had the Unhurried mug. And then there was a follow-up email with another photo. It was the same mug with their eggs and potatoes and their camping breakfast the next morning.
Nice.
So I love it. There they are out camping, and the mug is, you know, which is great because the mug kind of looks like a camping mug.
It does, yeah.
That's awesome. It fits perfectly. But here's my question. Did he wash the mug between the campfire experience and the breakfast the next morning? Or is he just like, is this camping clean? You know, we call it camping clean when we're camping. Like, how clean do we have to get these dishes?
Right.
You know,
right.
Just camping clean.
I'm not like a germaphobe kind of guy.
Yeah.
However, I am not an outdoors kind of guy.
Yeah.
I have embraced the 20th century with a roof over my head. I've never been camping.
Never.
Never.
So you don't even know what I mean by camping clean.
No.
Camping clean is...
It's not clean.
It's not clean.
Okay.
But you do the best you can.
Sure.
In our case, we're cleaning, you're washing dishes in a bucket.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So
right.
It's not like you've got a dishwasher with you.
What's the Wi-Fi password?
Yeah. There's no Wi-Fi password. You get camping clean. I feel like I'm experiencing camping clean right now with my Unhurried mug because I left this water in here from last week. I left this in here from our last week's podcast. And I go, where did I put my cup? Oh, I left it in
left
there.
It in there.
It's got water. I've taken one sip and I almost, you know, spit it out. It tastes so bad. So, you know, week old water.
Can't be clean.
Camping clean for sure. So, you know, we'll have to find out. So I'm asking him. Did you wash it, or did you just leave the hot chocolate in there all night long? The bugs and everything got in there. The bear smelled it. And then you just put your orange juice in it the next morning and
Just keep going.
A little coffee and you're good to go.
Yeah. That's what I picture camping is like.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You just dirty.
Yeah. When we're done camping, the last meal, we usually, you know, don't wash them at very much at all. We just kind of wipe them off, throw them all in a container and say, we'll wash these when we get home.
Then they'll be clean.
So there's always a basket of the stuff that we need to clean when we get home. Well, I'd love the fact that this listener sent us a photo of them with their mug.
That's
out
awesome.
Camping. So I'm going to request that people do the same. They send us a photo of you with
I think like a week or so ago, we got some photos of Unhurried merch in different states. And, you know, so
same thing. That's what we want. Right. That's right. Please do that. We want to see your mug, your hat, your puck, whatever you got, wherever you are.
Yeah. It's fun.
Picture the Eiffel Tower in the background. That'd be kind of cool.
Hey, that'd be kind of cool. You know?
If you go to Paris, let us know.
Yeah.
Or it can just be your backyard.
Yeah.
You know?
That's also fun too.
Yeah. Or your kids' hockey game.
Hey, that's
there
what
we
I'm
go.
Talking about.
Hockey made it. Made mention again.
There we go. And it wasn't me.
It wasn't. I know. I brought it up. So wherever it shows up, we'd like to see it. We will mention you if you send us your picture. Lots of people have also been saying, what's for the snack? What's for the snack today? That's
nice.
Still happening.
But
because of your comment last week about wanting Cindy's autograph rather than ours, lots of people are asking her now.
Really?
That's gone viral a little bit. So
there you go.
I think our
good
signature
job,
is not worth much, but hers apparently is coveted. So if you
mine's an R and it's scribble, scribble, scribble.
R, scribble, scribble. Yeah. Mine is legible. Sort
of. Yours is nice.
Sort of.
Very nice. Yeah. Very professional.
I feel like we've forgotten how to do signatures though with the sign with your finger thing.
Oh, I know.
I know. Next generation is not going to have signatures.
Well, it's so funny that you said that because now cursive is back into the
schools.
It's schools.
Okay.
It took a little break there for a little while and they brought it back now. And so, Remy is in first and, is he in first or second?
You know what position he plays in hockey, but no idea what grade he's in. That's fine. Good.
He's in second.
He's in second.
But they're starting to do cursive and everything now. And so I'm having to like relearn it because I'm just like, oh, wait, I don't remember.
How do I make a capital Q?
Like a Z? Do you remember how to do a Z in cursive?
It's just like, isn't it the same as a printing Z?
No. It's like the midline's right here, and it's like a three, and then it squiggles down and goes up, right?
Yeah, it's really weird.
It's weird.
Yeah. No, that would, I'd have forgotten that.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
Yeah. A lot of the letters I was relearning as he's learning, you know? So, and he picked it up pretty quickly. He's been writing in cursive now.
Yeah.
So,
good. I mean, that's my childhood. That's all he did is wrote in cursive.
I know.
But yeah, it's so maybe signatures are coming back.
I think so. I think they'll come back. Yeah,
okay,
for sure.
Good. Yeah. Good. Well, if you want a two-sided hockey puck with a signature on it, just simply come up to us, say, what's for snack today? If you don't know why you say that, you have to listen to the podcast 2 weeks ago and you'll know why. There's a story that Ryan told. All right. Well, thank you, Ryan.
Thank you, Doug.
Thank you to our enthusiastic listeners and viewers. Until next time, this has been Unhurried with me, your host, Doug Kyle. I look forward to talking soon.